Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero. Thanks for listening to The Tour Coach. These are the players, coaches, experts, stories, and insights from my work on the PGA Tour, at my retreats, or my downtown teaching center in Mobile, Alabama. My goal is to shed light and share insights from the people who I've gotten to know and meet working on the PGA Tour and teaching through my career. And I hope this helps all of us play, coach, and teach better golf. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review and take a look at our new Dew Sweepers YouTube channel or the Dew Sweeper on Instagram, where I've taken some time to share videos of help from my teachings, travels, and journeys. All right, so here we are. This is going to be one of the better tour coaches we've had in a while. We hadn't had one in a while where we've been out having a glass of wine or two. Sitting here with, actually, my Sherpa.
New student slash Sherpa.
The Sherpa. We call him the Sherpa. And Seth, my Sherpa. And Rick Lamb. Some people call him Mr. Monday now. Mondayed into Honda. Has Mondayed into Dominican Republic. Played nice, really nice down at the Honda. Ball striking stats were good. Rick, thanks for sitting in. I don't know that you've sat in one-on-one with me since the kitchen sessions.
Yeah,
that you had in Mobile.
About 2 years ago.
Yeah,
over 2 years ago.
A little over 2 years ago, because it was right before COVID.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the journey here. And we were kicking this around as we were having a glass of wine. And special shout out to our girl Trish. It was Kachina Restaurant. Trish, the co-owner, hostess, phenomenal job this evening, and certainly warmed up to us.
Top notch place.
Top notch. Humbly, if you're in Palm Beach, that's the place to go and tell Trish. Tony from the tour coach and the Dew Sweeper sent you.
Tony from Lower Alabama sent you.
From Lower Alabama. So let's talk about, so I always like, whenever we do one of these, Sherpa, I like to give a little bit of a lesson. Like, I think there's things people can learn because we have lots of golfers of all levels that listen. And I think in this age of immediate gratification, there's this desire to like go. So you took a lesson today from me. We did have a little bit of success. I kind of pulled some good stuff out after the 8.5 hour car ride. But Rick, not every time when you start working on something do you have immediate success. You see bright spots and whatnot. But the last 2 years you haven't played up to the standards you'd want or I'd want, but you've had bright spots and you've seen that you've progressed. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think a lot of people are just quick to just make change. And to me, that every time you change, you start back at zero. Let's talk a little bit about that. And then also kind of how you transformed into moving down here to South Florida, because I've had a blast coming down here with you, obviously. But I also think it's been phenomenal for your game and the stuff you've done with Colby while you've been down here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you tell me where you want to take it, but I think all those things are true. I mean, we've been working together for 2.5 years and basically been doing the same stuff over and over and over, and it's finally starting to show some progress. And we have obviously had some good weeks here and there, and but we've just kind of stayed the course. And obviously, on top of that, being down here in Florida, I think has been phenomenal for my game. I've only, hasn't even been really 3 months, but just the progress I've made down here, and especially in the wintertime when the weather's so good, you can get down here and get some good work in.
A lot of good players, too.
Yeah, I mean, all the best players in the world are down here, with the exception of maybe a few guys. But, I mean, Tiger's down here, Rory's down here.
That's all you
literally
need.
Literally everybody.
Right, Brooks. I mean, yeah. So let's just talk about the last 2.5 years. How did you approach it where you're not always playing good, but you're seeing good signs, you're seeing signs of life, you're seeing positive weeks? You had some really, really good weeks, and especially I thought you played really nice at the U.S. Open last year, especially the first round or so. You had stretches, you played great, didn't always put it all together. But how do you, as a player, how did you evaluate things where you said, hey, not always doing things where like I'm getting my card or finishing X, finishing Y, but I know I'm making progress, to where you don't just abandon ship and you change course? Because I think one of the things that happens to people out there is I think that they go on these short-term deals, or I think players hit a rough stretch and the initial reaction is to just change, right? And I mean, I know I'm probably biased because I'm a coach and I'm normally the guy getting fired. But I don't know that change is always the best thing. I think sometimes you can even regroup within your team.
Yeah,
and head in the right direction. How did you go about where, like, not always hitting your goal every year, but you feel like you're still making progress?
Well, I think to the point that you just made is, I think the biggest thing is having communication with your team, and I think I've finally gotten. I've had other points in my short career where I've had a good team around me, and it didn't pan out to be a long lasting team, but I've had some great guys around me, and I think right now the guys that I've got helping me out are as good as they get. I mean, I've obviously enjoyed working with you. Colby's transformed my body and helped me tremendously in the gym, which translates to success on the golf course. And I mean, there's just a lot of good people around me that are helping me out.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I think that the ability to look past week in, week out. Talk about your move down here and why it's been so good. And I love the fact that you're working so much one-on-one with Colby. We talked a bunch, I think it was in around Knoxville last year. And we talked about some stuff that your body couldn't do out of the top. The ability for your lower body to separate from your upper body.
Yeah.
We talked about how from the top of the swing, your upper body would tend to kind of outrace your lower body, and you would kind of lean into it, and that would be when you back out of it. And we talked about the need to physically get better. And to me, from then on, even though you'd done some stuff, you made a serious commitment to get better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, to a certain degree, is a lot of it was just a lack of consistency in my routine. I mean, I had, when I was living down in Sea Island, I had some good people around me, and I decided to move to Nashville, and that kind of put a wrench in a few things in terms of being able to work with certain people. And
what made you decide to move to Nashville?
I loved living in Sea Island, but moving to Nashville is kind of always something I thought about doing from when I was at the University of Tennessee. I got a lot of friends that ended up there after college.
It's a cool
town. It's always a fun town. I've always had a good time there, and I just figured I was young and single and wanted to buy a house, and met a great girl there named Emily, and we've been dating for a couple of years, and so it's been a good move for me. And I think it was good for my life away from golf, not necessarily great for my golf game. And I think moving down to Florida has kind of put me back on track for golf.
How do you think, we're going to digress here for a minute, Sherpa. I think the life away from golf for you is as important as the life with golf.
Yeah.
And I think that as players become more happy and more comfortable overall with their life away from golf, they become eventually better players. And like, I think that like maybe your golf game didn't progress the way you wanted while you were living in Nashville. The fact that you found stuff that, you know, you found a great girl in Emily, you're happy, and you had a good life where you enjoyed doing stuff away from golf course, I think bodes well ultimately more long term for you as a player, because I don't think you can just totally self-absorb yourself into golf and be a happy human being.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, I've heard you talk to Greg Carton about this on your podcast. I've talked to Greg about it. It's, I mean, there's, to a certain degree, obviously, we're sort of living out our childhood dreams playing professional golf and playing on the Korn Ferry or PGA Tour, whatever your dream was, but to a certain degree, if you don't have things going on outside of golf that make you happy, like, it's not a lot of fun out there, I would say. So I think moving to Nashville and me and Emily's kind of given me a perspective of like golf is not the most important thing in my life, which obviously takes a little pressure off the performance aspect.
Does it make it easier to practice doing that, like, or make you want to practice more or work? How does it change how you work?
I've probably practiced less since I've moved to Nashville, and just sort of getting that more kind of, I guess I'd say it's quality over quantity. So, I mean, when I was in Sea Island, it was just golf all the time, which was great, especially as a young professional, because there's so many guys down there that you can learn from, so many experienced guys. There's guys really at every level. There's from Davis Love down to Grayson Sigg, who's a rookie on the PGA Tour. I mean, there's just, you can learn from every single one of them, and you're in a competitive environment day in and day out. You're working out with these guys. You're trying to beat them on the golf course. So it's a great environment to be in as a young pro, but it doesn't leave a whole lot of room for anything else.
And I would say this, from having spent some time there, I think it's an amazing place. I spent some time teaching there.
Yeah.
But I also think that young guys, Emilio Gonzalez, who's a student of mine and a great all around guy. He's friends of all of us. But like, I think you find yourself where it's a one sided deal, and you become, you know.
To a certain degree, like you could feel like a robot because you're just doing golf all the
day,
time,
right?
Like, you don't. Like, you're young. You should be going having fun with your buddies. Go to a football game or...
You should be able to go to a bar and see chicks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
So,
do you feel like your quality of practice and everything with...
The Sherpa speaks.
Yeah. The moving to Nashville and everything, like, went up because you were able to check out a little bit, you know, go enjoy things outside of golf and then, you know, restarting in the morning again. Do you feel like that whole quality... Of practice?
I think the quality of my life went up. I don't think the quality of my practice went up because I wasn't in a good routine. I didn't have a trainer there. I was trying to do my own stuff in the gym and I wasn't consistent. And obviously it's hard to evaluate what you need, because if you're trying to make workouts for yourself, you're going to do stuff that you like to do. You're not going to do the hard stuff that you don't want to do, which is the stuff Colby makes me do.
Right. So let's transition that to moving here. Right. So now you're happy in life with Emily and living down here, got a great place to play and practice. There's good places. And then also you're with Colby, and everybody that listens to this knows my feelings on Colby. He's been the biggest influence on my teaching in the last decade because of the ability to help people do the things that I'm trying to get you to do, right?
Yeah.
And his positive influence on all of us. Talk a little bit about how working with him has made it easier, if it's easier or whatever, or how it's help the stuff we're trying to do in your golf swing.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the first time I worked with him in the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, I knew him from when I was on tour back in the day. I just went to say hi to him or whatever.
Yeah.
That was really the extent of our relationship. But when you had him up to Sea Island, I guess it was early in the pandemic, he gave me an evaluation. He gave me a couple things that I should work on in the gym, and worked on them a little bit, and they seemed to translate pretty well, pretty quickly to my game. And started working with him that fall, where he'd send me some stuff and I'd do it in the gym, and it definitely helped, but I wasn't as consistent with it as I have been the last 3 months that I've been here, where I can go see him when I'm in town rather than on an off week flying down to Florida from Nashville instead of kicking my feet up at home.
I also think what he does is different in the fact that what he gives you is specifically designed for what you're working on in your golf swing.
Yeah.
And I've said this a million times, and I've whatever talked at some things, and I've said, like, I would always, you know, I've always been around fitness people, and they would come in and they would just tell you all this stuff you need to do, and they'd give you their opinion, but a lot of it didn't coincide or mesh just with what you're doing in your golf swing, and you got all this stuff to do. Whereas if you've got four exercises that directly relate to what we're trying to do in the golf swing, I think to me it's way easier to be hyper focused on it and then also to see how it translates.
Yeah, well, I think that's what makes Colby so good, is that he gives, I think with golf and the training aspect of it, there's foundational, fundamental things that every single guy needs to do on a weekly basis or a daily basis. And then there's things that personally you need to work on. And Colby's good at identifying the things you need to work on and giving you the structure of, all right, you need to do this all the time and just do it over and over and over and over until you master it, and then do it more. Because I think that's what we're all looking for, is consistency. And if you have a consistent routine, if your body's as dialed in as it can be on a daily basis because you're doing the right stuff, you're going to play good golf.
And what people don't always see is they'll see the videos he puts up of you in the gym or the videos I put up of you hitting, but they don't see the group text of me saying, hey, with you and Colby on the text, hey, we're trying to get him to turn more into his right side.
Yeah.
Like, because you're backing out of it or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, 4 minutes later, bam, I got you.
Yeah.
And it's like four exercises. You need to do this. This is going to help you do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it, is that I can put us on a group text.
You can do on the range. If I'm with you, I can do on the range right away, and you can see an immediate impact. It changes your swing slightly and gets you closer to where you want to be.
And we're going to do this with Sherpa some tomorrow, but like, that's what I love about his exercises, is we can do some of those, which helps, you know, it helps you learn whatever the body mechanics or the body motion is, and helps you do it without using a club. So now let's shift to the Monday quality. Let's talk about, so you got partial Korn Ferry status, right? But you've kind of chosen, like, you know, hey, played in the U.S. Open last year, played well. You want to play the PGA Tour. You've played on the PGA Tour. Let's talk about your mindset and your thought process, and then you Monday into Honda, and let's talk a little bit about that and how you played at Honda and what our thought process is going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of, I guess, the biggest shift that I had this offseason was, I mean, everybody's goal is to play on the PGA Tour and play at the highest level and play in the biggest tournaments, and I think my best shot at doing that is playing Monday qualifiers, and if I have a good week, I can potentially play my way into the Korn Ferry playoffs, or if I play great, I can somehow play my way into some status out there. I mean, that's where I want to be. That's where I see myself playing golf. If I'm going to continue to do this, that's where I want to be. So I think that's at where I am right now with my status. That's the most direct route I have, is I can go play Monday qualifiers and try to get into the tournament and play as good as I can.
So when you Mondayed into Honda, thought Honda was a great, you played well, but I thought it was a great tournament for you from the fact that, like, it reminded me of the U.S. Open. I mean, it's a ball strikers golf course. Like, it's not, and I'm not making fun of a Korn Ferry golf course, but a Korn Ferry golf course, generally speaking, you hit it and you wedge it, right?
Yeah,
you're a ball striker. You play golf.
Yeah, you don't get that challenge as often on the Korn Ferry Tour.
There's a few
weeks here and there, especially more towards the playoffs, where you gotta step up and play some good golf, but for the most part, guys are shooting 20 to 26 under to win a tournament. And I think I do better when it's more plot your way around, and you gotta just strike your ball. I love hard golf. The U.S. Open was obviously awesome to play in a major, but I was more excited because I wanted to see how my game measured up.
What did you take from that? When you left the U.S. Open at Torrey, what did you take from it? What did it tell you about your game?
I think that first round and the last round were probably the most important for me, because obviously the first round we were delayed and we only played 13 holes, but I hit the ball as good as I've hit it in a long time. I was in complete control, and I obviously didn't make many putts that first day, but it showed me that my game, when it's clicking, I can play a U.S. Open golf course pretty damn well.
Which tells you can play with anybody.
Yeah.
Honda, what'd you take from that?
Similar in terms of just the grind of the week. I mean, it was obviously a tough golf course, and you're kind of on that knife's edge all week of trying to get some momentum going and make some birdies and shoot 2 to 4 under, and you can kind of pass some guys doing that, trying to balance that out with avoiding the all that.
Really, if you shot even each day, you moved up. You know,
yeah.
It's interesting watching this. Shot even, you moved up, which is a good feeling. Like, as a coach, you watch a guy. To me, a tournament's a good tournament. If you shoot even par 1 under and you move up some, the golf course is set up pretty good and fair. That's kind of what I think.
I mean, I thought that week was a good measuring stick for my game, to where obviously I played some good golf and showed some signs of good golf, but I didn't feel like I putted that well. Felt like I had a couple of sloppy mistakes that led to double bogeys, and which is just something you can't make double bogeys on tour.
What'd you do that was a sloppy mistake?
I think I made a double bogey on the 18th hole in the first round. I got a little aggressive to a pin where, I mean, if I hit it 15 feet short of the hole, you got a good chance at birdie, or 10 feet or whatever, and I wanted to hit it to 2 feet to a pretty tucked pin that I didn't have any room to miss long on, and I missed long. So, and then Sunday,
was that more getting caught up in the moment? You're playing good.
I think it was, I struggled to get some momentum going early in the round, and then I started hitting good on the back nine and just made a birdie on 17 and just felt like things were clicking. And to be honest, I just hit a shot and just flushed it through the wind and plugged it in the back bunker. So, but it's just one of those things where you got to take risks if you want to play good golf,
right.
And it's sometimes you pay the price.
What about now? So you felt good coming out of there. Same type of feeling coming out of Honda. You felt like your game's trending in the right direction, and
it's obviously a good way to solidify and gain confidence in the work you're doing with you and Colby, and the move down here just to have a little bit of progress early on is obviously a nice validation, I guess you can say. I don't know.
What's your frame of mind? I mean, you're going to get asked about this a gazillion times. Like, what's your frame of mind when you go play at Monday? Like, is it the same as every? I was just curious, because, like, that golf course y'all played this past week, I walked it the week before some, which I think was the Puerto Rico Monday.
Yeah, same place. Yeah.
Right? So it was the same place. Miami Lakes or International of the Lakes.
Yeah, right next to the Miami airport.
Right, yeah. And, you know, it's kind of a quirky, like, it had some quirky holes on it, right?
Yeah, I thought it was overall a decent golf course, but just not in very great condition.
But
I'd have been pissed off if I paid $500 to play that.
Well, yeah, they don't charge people that, do they?
They do for guys with no status.
But damn. So that's something for the Monday morning.
Yeah.
On the qualifier guy. But, but I walked it. I walked probably 6-7 holes. I watched Zach and Tom play some the Monday before. Yeah, I was just watching the score. Anyways, I was just curious, like, what's your thought process when you go into that? Do you go into it where you're like, I got to shoot 8 under? Or, I mean, because some guys play better on Monday, some guys don't play worth a damn in them. How do you approach play that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an attitude thing. You got to show up and just think that you're the best player there and go play good as golf as you can. To be honest, I like going into them blind. I don't like playing practice rounds for them, and I've had a lot of success.
I think that's cool, though.
I played this past Monday for the Dominican blind. I played a mini tour event on Saturday and Sunday, so I didn't have a chance to get over there for a practice round. Because I think it makes you play the hole that's in front of you because you don't know what's coming up. In a Monday qualifier, I think that's important because it's a sprint. You got to be as focused as you can on every shot. You can't be like, all right, well, I got a birdie hole coming up. Like, you're trying to birdie the hole that's in front of you.
So, everybody does that too. If you know the golf course, they're like, okay, I know 7 or whatever I can birdie, 7 or 8, and then you kind of fall asleep on 5 and 6. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about the idea of not playing a practice round. How the hell did you come up with that? Because I mean, every golfer could learn from this, in my opinion. What the hell made you decide that not playing a practice round was better?
I think I figured it out in 2015 when I didn't have status. It was my second summer as a professional. I had Monday qualified in the summer before for the first time in Knoxville. I was familiar with the golf course, and obviously it was exciting to qualify, play my first Korn Ferry event in Knoxville. But anyway, the next summer I qualified for 5 in Mondays, and then I think I topped 25 in 1 or 2.
Wait a minute, you Mondayed 5 times?
In 2015.
Mr. Monday.
Mr. Monday's right.
So I would say there was a few events that were kind of back-to-back where I made the cut, played the weekend, didn't play well enough to get into the next week. So I'd have to fly from Boise, Idaho to San Francisco and play the Monday qualifier the next day after I played on Sunday. And I'd have to play blind because I'd get in at like midnight and go play whenever my tee time is in the afternoon or the morning or whatever. Go play on Monday, go play blind. And I kind of picked up on that probably that week in San Francisco when I did that. It was probably the second or third time I'd done it. And it kind of clicked for me, and I was playing good golf, and I was just like, I mean, this is kind of great because I don't know what's coming up. I don't know what's in front of me. I'm literally hitting the shot that's in front of me. And it just, for what, I don't know.
Which is what, like, clicked. Every person always talks about playing golf, right?
Yeah, and it's
the most important shot in front of you.
It's impossible to do if you know the golf course.
Impossible.
Yeah. Because your brain is going to go there, and you just got to find a way to switch back to where you are.
Yeah, man.
But if you haven't played the golf course, you can't. You literally can't. You don't know what's coming.
It'd be a great thing for Dr. Greg to figure out how to teach us all to pretend we don't know the golf course, right?
It's true. I mean, I hear a lot of scratch golfers say, when they're playing a golf course, like, oh, if I can take advantage of the par fives and, and make a couple birdies there, yeah, you're going to have, hopefully birdie another par four somewhere in the round, but have a bogey here and there. Oh, 2 under is very gettable.
That's the expectation.
And so do you think that'd be beneficial for, I've heard that multiple times. Do you think that'd be beneficial for, the average golfer, I mean, not even the average, but a scratch golfer to not think about that mentality? And of course, they've even played a bunch of times.
Yeah, I mean, I think for anybody, expectations kind of ruins your golf game because either if you expect to play good, you're trying to live up to, in your mind, what playing good is. And every round of golf is different. I mean, you can score, you can shoot 68 and feel like you didn't play that good, or you can shoot 72 and feel like you played great. So that's just how golf is, and I don't think expectations help you play good. And if you have bad, if you have negative expectations, sometimes you play great rounds. So it's kind of, there's no rhyme or reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, Greg, I remember one of the first things we did, because I was old school being brought up, like, where if you have a negative thought, like, it's a bad deal, right?
Yeah.
And it, and it'd be like, well, how many times have you thought good things, but you've hit a shitty shot, or you've hit, or you're like, oh, don't hit it there, but you've hit a good one, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that one of the things I've learned from him is that it's natural to have bad thoughts. It's how you handle them, and right? But one of the things I wanted to ask you, and we can kind of wrap up towards this, is I had the good fortune, I've met him at the U.S. Open and talked again at the Honda, was you've got a friendship with Paul Azinger, spent some time with him. Talk a little bit about some of the stuff you've learned from him. You don't have to give away all your trade secrets, but I've found the philosophy and some of the stuff that he's talked about with you to be fascinating. And to me, it's just a gem of a gift being able to talk with some of these guys that have had so much success playing the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I think that's something I've talked to you about, is trying to seek out guys that have been in the arena doing it and have had success doing it. And I think my relationship, I'm very lucky to have met Paul. I met him through my twin brother and my buddy Sean Jacklin over in Bradenton. They started playing with him out at the concession. And mm-hmm. I would go over there and play with them a couple of times and got to know Paul. And he's become a big influence on my golf game, my short game especially, and also just sort of my philosophy of how I approach my practice, how I approach preparation for tournaments, all of it. So he's helped me tremendously.
Give us one thing, like something that changed. What was different? Give us something different that he told you that was different than what you were doing.
I mean, there's a couple of things like with like fundamentals of how I was like, my actual like physical motion with chipping and pitching that he's helped me learn how to release the club and use the bounce better, and so stuff like that, which is more on the fundamental side. And then also just how to practice better and get more out of my practice, and he taught me that there's a certain area that I was neglecting, which is sort of like off speed wedges, and really how important those are.
You've done awesome with those,
because anybody can hit a full swing shot to their number, but if you got to hit a shot that's what you, I guess, call an off-speed shot, like a 60-yard where it's a half swing or whatever, those are the things that if you don't know what that feels like, you're probably not going to pull that shot off.
What about, like, you practice religiously the 30, 40, 50-yard shots?
Yeah, I mean, that just goes...
And not everybody does that.
That just goes along. I mean, that's what... It's helped my wedge game tremendously and sort of my confidence on the golf course, just knowing what that feels like. So that's something I try to, it's a fundamental in my practice now that I work on those off-speed pitches, and in a lot of them are shorter than you'd ever think that you should ever practice, which
it's amazing. How many times
amazing, you get them, but once you're aware of that and you get out on the golf course, you're shocked by how many times you have these little soft wedges or however you want to hit the shot, but off-speed wedges.
Right. Amazing. Like when we started talking about it, I think we were actually over at that Sea Palms sneaking in a session because we weren't allowed at Fred. So, well, I mean, it's the truth. So we snuck over to Sea Palms and we did a little session, and you were hitting those 30-yard shots and 40-yard shots, but you started looking at the 30-yard shots and we were talking, and you're like, I mean, how many times do you actually get that? Like par fives. Miss the green, pins at the back, 30-yard shot, right? Same thing, long par four. Like, how many of those you get? You get 2, 3, 4 of those rounds,
yeah.
You know? And you get those up and down.
And if you just get one more up and down than you normally would, that's 4 shots for a tournament. That's the difference between 15th place and 3rd place sometimes. Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing from – I've talked to Paul such like a nanosecond of what you've done. But it's just listening to him is the mindset. And it's a mindset of a guy that knows he's going to be successful.
Yeah.
And knows he's going to win. And I mean, to me, the stuff he talks about, it's always just like, you're going to do this. You got to do this. You got to do it, right?
It's amazing how simple it is in his mind.
Correct.
And he's so good.
It's brilliant, though.
And he's so good at articulating thoughts and feelings. but it's just so simple in his mind, and it's amazing. He's just like, it's what he says to us all the time. He goes, it's a simple game, boys, but it ain't easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, I mean, that's what golf is. It's, everybody knows what they have to do, but it's not easy to do it.
When you seek out these guys that have had past experience, do you feel like it's more on the technique or different ideas and the information that you get? Do you feel like it's more on the mental side of a different way to look at things from the mental approach to the game, or is it just all over the place depending on the guy?
Yeah, I think you get different information from each player because everybody's carved their own path and they've got their own sort of foundational beliefs about what it takes to become a good golfer, because whatever they did got them to where they went in their career, and that's what they believe in. I think the stuff I've learned from Paul is more about like how to practice, how to prepare, and sort of how to carry yourself as a player. Which is, I think, has helped me more than anything.
I think that's, yeah. And I think it's the same, like, I know, and I'm just speaking from a teacher's point of view, but, like, when I've gone to watch other great teachers, people that I admire and respect, it's not just the information, like, the X's and O's of teaching that I'm watching. I know from the couple times I've observed Butch, and everybody knows I'm a huge Butch fan, but, like, it wasn't just the X's and O's of Butch. It was how he carried himself as a teacher, how he handled himself in front of a student, how he thought about teaching, and those things are just as important.
I think from your perspective, it's all about who the player is and knowing how you can get, like with our relationship, how you can get the most out of me.
Right.
And I'm someone who, if I'm not doing the right things, I need to be yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I respond to that, I guess. Some guys need probably a more delicate approach, but I think that's a challenge for you guys, is figuring out how to get the most out of the player.
You have guys that, you know, you have guys that are, you know, super hard on themselves, that you're beating up at home, whatever, like, they don't need to be yelled at more.
Yeah.
They need you to put their arm around and tell them that you're doing an okay job and, hey, we're on the right track.
Or somebody just to go have fun with.
Right. You know? And then there's guys that, man, like, we have plenty of fun, but you got to go, hey, we don't need to wander off things that we're doing. We got to stick to what we're doing because we're doing the right stuff. And or, you know what, you're doing the right stuff, but you haven't been in the gym in 3 weeks, and your ass isn't moving as good, right? I mean, I think that's the art of teaching.
Absolutely. You know?
Sherpa, any party comments? This has been a good one.
No, I don't think I really, have anything other than...
Hey, how'd you like your first lesson with me today?
I gotta say, it was pretty good. I don't want to get your head too big, but... you know, it was pretty good. I'm excited for...
Was it as good as dinner with me at Kachina?
I don't know. That had some pretty good scenery.
Entertainment value is high.
BDR, awesome stuff. Can't wait to go to Dominican. Going to keep the roll going. Sherpa, we're going to get after it again tomorrow. Look forward to another one. Thanks for sitting in. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Tour Coach. I want to take a minute and thank Cordy Walker and Golf Science Lab, as well as my sponsors Strixon, Buick, Bushnell, and Vineyard Vines for helping make all of this possible and helping me share my insights with you. If you like what you've heard, why don't you check out more on the Dew Sweepers channel on YouTube, as well as the Dew Sweeper on Instagram, or go to dewsweepersgolf.com to find out more about my teaching, my travels, and where you can find out more about me.